Welcome to episode 146 of Not a Real Job, a podcast that's occasionally about business, sometimes about marketing, but is always 100%
fun.
It's definitely, it's an audio medium.
It's fun with a question mark. I think the question mark is essential.
Yeah, I lost my confidence right there at the end. I couldn't think of a single adjective that we were consistent on, which I think that means we're surprising, and I think it means we're fresh.
Well, I mean, I think it means we're definitely not confident.
Oh, goodness, no. Who is this day and age? It's 2018. Nobody's confident.
You know, it is hard to pin us down. We are not things more often than we are things,
wow.
I would say.
That's profound. There was profundity there.
Very deep. Very deep. That's what I aim for here at this show that we do.
How's your week?
It's been okay. It's been okay. That's good. Kind of the story of my life lately.
Okay.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, it's been close to a month, I think, since we recorded. Maybe not quite, but it's
like
been a couple weeks. And yeah, very little has changed since we last spoke on this podcast.
Well, I believe in the last episode, I'd been able to essentially interrogate you into admitting you've never been happy. So, I mean, do you...
That sounds right.
Yeah. Feel so that's consistent?
Yeah, I would say there are sort of glimmers of happiness, enough to kind of keep me going, you know?
Fair enough.
Yeah, no, I mean, there are certainly some good things that have happened. I am officially, I mean, that makes it sound so fancy. There's certainly no ceremony or anything, but I am now a member of the Gutenberg team, which is exciting. Not the core team. There's still a smaller team within a team, but I am one of the a member of the contributing team, which is really exciting. And there are, you know, not a ton of people who can say that, so that's really cool, and I'm happy about that.
Awesome, congratulations. It's good. That's really good, and good that you're able to, you know, take the moment to appreciate how cool that is.
Yeah, it's, you know, so last week I was in Chicago, which is the reason we didn't have an episode last
week,
and I was at WordCamp for Publishers,
mm-hmm.
Which is really great, you know, getting a lot of WordCamps. You know, I was recently in WordCamp Halifax. I think we might have mentioned that on the show. I've been to a lot of WordCamps in my day, and many of them, I love the events very much. I think they're so important, but tend to focus on a more beginner audience. And so this was one that was great because it was really focused on enterprise WordPress and also publishers, which of course is a topic near and dear to my heart as a print addict. So, you know, you've got developers from the New York Times and USA Today and Gatehouse Media and a lot of the really big publishers around the US were represented. So it was really cool to be amongst a group of professionals and, you know, several WordPress core developers and Gutenberg contributors were there. And it was great to be among that group. But of course, being in Chicago for almost a week at a conference where, you know, I actually wanted to attend most of the sessions and wanted to be engaged in the conference does mean that you come back a week later with your to-do list having sort of barely changed. So while that was a lot of fun work-wise, things are kind of about as buried as they were before I left, unfortunately. But that's the trade-off that one makes, I guess.
Did you see anything cool in Chicago? I've never been. It's a place I would like to go to at some point. I hear the architecture is interesting.
Yeah, this was my first trip to Chicago. I had never been before either.
Well, I've been to the airport, but...
I had never even been through the airport.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and that's an experience. Thank God for lounges. I'll just leave it at that. Mm-hmm. It is definitely a architecturally beautiful city for the most part. We did take, as part of the conference, we took an architectural boat tour, which is really great. And you have a guide who, she was fantastic, a volunteer guide for the Chicago Architectural Foundation and kind of talking through things, you know, and it's an architectural boat tour, so we're on the river and there's drinks, and that was really fun, getting to hear about some of the history of Chicago. Yeah, that was cool. We went to a sport game, the White Sox. That was pretty cool. Unfortunately,
baseball.
Yeah, baseball. Nice. Exactly. You've heard of it.
I'm well aware of it. I've been aware of it being on the television when I've been near the television.
Huh. That's fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, unfortunately, the conference, the venue is great, but the location was kind of in, I guess the neighborhood's called River North, but to me, it kind of felt a little bit like staying at a hotel, you know, off like Fifth Avenue and like 45th Street or something. Mm-hmm. So those of you with New York familiarity, it's like you're kind of in between like high shopping and sort of Times Square-y sorts of things. Like my hotel was next door to the Uno Chicago pizza place, mm-hmm. you know, like the chainiest of the Chicago pizza places. So that was kind of a bummer. But
M&M's store anywhere nearby?
There was not, but there was an Eataly and a Shake Shack. So I really that also contributed to really not feeling like I was in a different.
Did you go anywhere? Yeah. All right. Have you considered the fact that this might all be kind of a Truman Show scenario and that maybe you didn't go anywhere?
It's certainly possible. I would believe it.
I think about that a lot.
Yeah, I did get one night. I was able to get away from conference stuff and go to a more hip neighborhood a little further out. And I really was only there for a little bit. But I can tell that Chicago is a cool city that I definitely would like to go back to and maybe spend a little less time in the city center.
I hear it's windy there, even though I guess that's not where that comes from, but still.
It wasn't.
It's irrelevant.
But it's also summer. I think it's probably windier in the winter, if I had to guess.
Interesting.
What have you been doing, Joel?
Podcasting. The last 8.5 minutes or so.
Okay.
Farther back from that. Been working a lot, but things have been going pretty well. Knock on everything. I don't think I was superstitious 15 or so months ago, but. Now, here boy, have things changed. now,
so is it like superstition or just like a heightened awareness of the fragility of everything and just hoping to heck that things stay the same?
Oh, you mean that constant sense of falling?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that too. Also, I find myself knocking on wood a lot, even though I don't know. I know that doesn't do anything.
It makes us feel better.
My audio levels look really bad. I can't imagine this is going to sound good, but that's fine. I don't think I've changed anything from last time. Yeah, but you're hearing me in a different way than our audience will be.
Ah.
But that's fine. It doesn't matter. I think
we'll fix it in post.
Yeah. Steve, just replace me with sound effects.
Actually, it's funny that that this comes up. In the past 2 days, I've listened to two separate podcasts where the host said something like, hey, you know, editor, make sure to cut this part out. And it was left in. And oh, boy, that's just the cringiest feeling. You just feel so bad.
Oh,
it's like,
man.
Do you say something? Do you email them? Like, what do you do? And I, of course, choose not to engage and just kind of try to move past it as quickly
as I
can.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Was it like really bad stuff?
No, it was just, you cut out for a sec, but we'll edit this out, you know, stuff like that. Oh, well.
Luckily, we have professionals.
Indeed. The best team in the biz.
I'm confident Steve has replaced me with just a series of wacky sound effects. And this whole podcast will just be you reacting to that.
That sounds about right.
Do we want to just do a couple clean passes of you just reacting? Or you know what? There's probably enough material.
I think so.
I don't really want to give you a solo platform, to be honest.
That's fair.
Yeah, things have been good. I've been blogging more. Content, hashtag content is something that I've been doing more for our business, which has been exciting because I finally feel like we have some direction on what we should be doing. It's taken a while. It honestly took Leah and I about a year to write our own marketing plan, which. You know, everyone who
the
owns their own business
children
understands and, exactly.
Yeah.
So I feel like we don't have to explain that, but I'm glad we finally got around to it. And now I finally feel like I have some direction on on what I want to be writing about that's unique to me and my experience in this business and that I can offer some perspective on. So enjoy that feeling.
Well, so I'm not interested in your specific perspective.
Goodness, no.
But I am interested, though. Very interested in hearing about the process of creating content and what that looks like for you and how that, like, really how that feels for you. Is it something that you can do very easily? Do you enjoy doing it? Does it kind of drain you? All these things. I'm really interested to hear about that. As somebody who knows that I need to do content myself, do content, whatever that means, is aware that I need to put more of my own ideas into the world. I'm curious, like, how that goes for you and how that works.
When I'm writing and I feel like I'm on a roll, it is one of the most enjoyable experiences that I have. So when I am writing content, the experience is great if I feel like I'm going down a direction that I believe in. It is awful and I don't do it if I feel like if it's not coming naturally to me. Now, of course, you know, I've written a ton of content, having run a content marketing department for a business, a lot of content that, you know, I'm not passionate about, but I can write on the subject and I can do that and get paid for it and be fine. The cobbler's children thing comes in when it's for my own business and I technically could avoid doing it, even though it's crucial to getting leads and customers, but I can put it off if I don't believe in it. So the important thing recently was finding out what I believe in, what the perspective is that I care about, and having that sense of direction. And now it's coming to me much more naturally, and now I've actually enjoyed doing it. I've written a couple blog posts just over the last couple weeks, I've made a couple videos, and the response has been much greater than the stuff that I've labored over semi-recently but didn't really feel passionate about. Got no response, but took a lot more effort.
Now, what you're saying...
So I guess the lesson is, if you feel like you have the proper strategy, the implementation is not just easier, but more effective. That's what I'm saying.
Right. So you're saying that you have to put work in up front. And that, to me, just seems wrong.
This is... Yeah, I know. It's the worst thing about life. Yeah. And inertia is probably the shittiest thing that we have to deal with. if we didn't have that, moving and thinking and doing would be a lot easier. But yeah, I think there's just a lot of business inertia that you have to overcome is how I feel. But like inertia, rolling the giant rock in the right direction is just as important as getting it moving at all, I think. So I think that has been, that's been important. And so that's been satisfying, and the business has been going well, at least revenue wise, over the last little while. We're having some struggles with some client stuff and utilization of time and profitability of certain projects and stuff like that, like any business. But otherwise, things have been going well enough where we've had the, I'll say it, luxury to start thinking more long term, start thinking more about not scale in the sense of staff, but scale in the sense of, you know, I think we can take on more projects of a certain type, and be, even more profitable. And we've been lucky that we've been able to have a two-person, business that's been able to scale up to a certain level. So I don't know where I'm going with this other than to say, I feel like if I don't say it out loud, I'm not going to remember that things were going pretty well right now. You know, tomorrow when I stub my toe or I sit down and look at all the work that I have to do, I'll forget that that things were pretty okay.
It is important, and yet something that I essentially never do, to kind of look back at the things that have been accomplished.
Yeah. Exactly. Anything that you want to talk about now, anything that you are proud of, this can be a record of the things that we've ever accomplished, if we want it to be that.
No,
maybe we'll plan that episode. I think we maybe should have that episode one day, though. But yeah, it might take a bit of planning. I think it would be nice for us, because this even for time capsule purposes could be interesting. Though again, I think as I've said before, if I could expunge from the internet any record of my existence, I would in a second. But since we can't, we might as well press record on. It for posterity. Yeah. I feel like I had some other things I wanted to talk to you about business wise, and I think the big one is on the subject of hiring. So I've been listening to a lot of podcasts recently.
That you're a pod boy?
I'm a serious pod boy, for sure. I've changed. That's what it says on my business cards now. But I've heard, I'm not going to say contradictory opinions, but I'd really like to get your take, because you've done a lot of where I have done a lot of hiring for, frankly, you know, someone else's business. I was hiring people, but I didn't own the business. I have yet to do really lots of hiring for my business. So I'd like to talk to you about, you know, what big lessons you take away? I guess what I'm saying, the last couple of podcasts I've listened to have had hard revenue numbers. Like, you shouldn't hire someone until you're at X revenue, which that I get. And I can be like, okay, let's say I'm at that revenue level. I guess it's time to hire someone. I feel like that's not enough of a barometer. Do you have any kind of lessons or things that you've learned about, you know, when do you think, you know, based on what you've learned, the right time to make a hire is? Do you have any better indicators of this is the right time or this is the wrong time from your experience?
I don't. And the reason, and if you had asked me this a year ago, I would have had a very different answer. I think a year ago, I would have said that you should hire before you think you need to hire and leverage that additional capacity to help you scale. But I think as we talked about on the last episode, lately, I've scaled back very intentionally and cut the team back down. Having realized that in several cases, I hired too soon, that I thought that I could, you know, scale up by having the additional people, but then you kind of run into, utilization issues, right? And especially when you're working with part-timers. I think if you have the ability to hire a full-timer, if you have that fund, you know, set aside, if that's available to you, I think a lot of the equation changes, right? Because if you can guarantee, if you know that you have the money to pay somebody's salary and have the work for a single person, I think that's a much easier, at least like practically, I think emotionally that's a lot harder, but practically it's much easier to kind of rationalize. I think for me, having mostly focused on contractors, it's practically, or emotionally rather, it's a little bit easier because you have kind of the out of being like, you know, there, it's a work for hire situation. It's, you know, that kind of thing. You know, I don't have to worry about supporting them for the next year. But there are a lot of practical considerations there. Like, you know, as much as it is easier to hire a contractor, it is also, much easier for the contractor to quit, or, you know, just not have the hours that they need. So I don't know, all this to say, as I ramble here, I would say, like, to a degree, like, I don't know that there's like a good kind of calculus for this. I think it's kind of a gut instinct in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to make sure that you have that you have the cash basically guaranteed. I think one, that's what I would say. I wouldn't hire somebody in advance of a project. I would just push the project out, you know, get the signature and say, we'll start this in a month. We need time to spin up the team.
Yeah.
Because that has bit me in the past. And I think we've talked about that on the show, where I did in one case hire a new contractor for a project that we ended up losing at the very last minute due to some contract issues. Mm-hmm. So I guess, like, if I were to try to apply some rules here, I would say, one, hire when you know and know, as in have signature on paper, that you will have the money to pay for that person. And when you have a very clear idea of what that person is going to do, don't hire a position that you think you need, or a position that you're like, you know, something that you haven't like done before, can't really like clearly articulate like what the value of the position is. I think so. Yeah, I think if I had to try to distill it down, I realize this is very vague.
I think
those would be my 2 points.
Yeah, I think that's very helpful. And again, I think the vagueness comes from experience that it's not as black and white as at times it might seem like it should be. I do just want to clarify, because I again, listening to lots of podcasts that are supposedly about and by successful business owners, I think a lot of context gets missed. So I don't want to do the same thing. Saying even that, you know, we have a 2-person company is inaccurate. Lee and I are the only owners of the company. We're the only full-time staff, but we have tons of support. We have a contract writing support. I have a virtual assistant. I use services like Fancy Hands and Wonder and all that stuff. So I think just for clarity's sake, if anyone out there is thinking of starting their own business or thinking, you know, that we're at all special, that there are only 2 of us can run a business, but no, it takes a lot. And it takes a lot of support, and that's a lot of overhead too, because you can think about, you know, for a business like ours, you might imagine that all revenue is profit, but there's a significant amount of overhead kind of no matter what size of business, or even if you're a fully service business like ours.
Yeah, I guess for me, what I would say, like, I think even more than, I think it's more important if you're hiring a contractor to even know what the job is, but I think either way, I think the most important thing is just knowing that you have the funds, because I really only did that in that one case with the contract that fell through. But I do think it's kind of a common thing that people stumble into, is like, oh, well, I will need this role, or thinking that they can scale further by having the person. But that so often does not work out. So yeah, make sure that you have the money, basically. Yeah. Like it's really that simple, because you know, you are taking in a lot of ways, you're taking additional responsibility for another person, and you owe them a commitment, and you owe them respecting that commitment. So don't be cavalier with that. Because like at best you get lucky, but that's so rare.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense, and I think that's reassuring as well. I think so far it sounds like we're not we haven't made at least too many mistakes that we've been aware of. But man, I was just talking to my brother earlier today of how, I mean, this is something everyone talks about, but you don't understand until you experience the sense of isolation of being a business owner, of second guessing every single decision, and feeling kind of at times, you know, a little rudderless. So yeah, any decision like this feels fraught, and like there's a million invisible minds surrounding you at all times.
Yeah. I don't know if we've talked about this on the show, but I think we've talked about it, you know, maybe off mic. Mm-hmm. To me, like, I do plan to continue working with certain select contractors who sort of augment my skill set rather than duplicate my skill set. Yeah. I know we've talked about that, but if I were to ever get to a point where I wanted to hire somebody to duplicate my skill set, I think the most important thing would be really having a safety fund, a safety net,
right,
that I knew I could fall back on, because like hiring somebody to duplicate yourself, to do kind of the things that you know you're capable of doing, in a lot of ways is a luxury.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be spending on luxuries until you have kind of the basics taken care of. And that, to me, and what I'm working toward, is at least a 6-month emergency fund. So basically enough to pay my kind of average expenses for 6 months. Once I have that in place, not only do you, can you really like justify the prospect of hiring somebody who duplicates your skill sets, but the whole hiring process becomes much less stressful, and the responsibility that you have doesn't change, but it's you know that that's managed. You know that you have a cushion there, so that if things do go wrong, that you can have a seamless either journey through the dark period there, or you know that you have enough time to transition that person out of your business without skimping on payroll and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a mistake that I've certainly made before, but I think have kind of come to realize how essential that safety fund is, really.
Cool. Well,
especially as like as an anxious person, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I get a lot of advice from business coaches and business owners and things who are very like cavalier with spending, and I've certainly made my mistakes in the past, but I've kind of realized I basically have to approach my business in a way that kind of minimizes my or avoids my sort of personal hangups and issues. And one of those is like that I get super anxious about money. So how do I solve that? I get a 6 month or a 1 year emergency fund. And some business coaches would be like, what are you doing? Like, you should be investing that money. Like, you should be putting that toward hiring or marketing or whatever. But I know that I'm going to feel 10 times better knowing that I have that to fall back on. And maybe it's not the most sound business move that I could make, but I know it's the best for me.
Exactly. And I mean, the guys, I think it was on Tropical MBA, talked about this. Like, you know, it's the different types of bets you're making. And you're trying to make a bet that is most likely to turn out to you being, you know, comfortable and ideally wealthy. The bets other people can make might be what's most likely to make them a billionaire. It's unfortunately highly unlikely that they'll ever get there. So yes, if you want to make the bet to get to that place, you might need to overextend yourself. But that's a very, very, very risky bet. And if your goal is, I'm not going to say less ambitious or more modest, but I think just if you have a different capacity for risk, there are safer bets you can be making that can still make you potentially comfortable and wealthy, and yeah, maybe you should be investing that money, but paying down debt and having a safety net is probably a safer and smarter long-term bet.
Yeah, I think there are certain types of business owners, even aside from the folks shooting for the billionaire unicorn status, like I think there are business owners who kind of enjoy and really kind of thrive in the discomfort and in the kind of the risk of it all. Like there is a feeling of gambling there. There is a feeling of like doing these great risky things, right? And for me, it's been a really hard journey to accept the fact that that's just not who I am.
Yeah.
And that really what I want is comfort. I don't want to feel like I'm taking big bets and making big gambles and potentially going to lose it all. And I know a lot of people for whom that's like really, really valuable and really enlivening and really motivating. And so for a long time, especially because that's, that's kind of the model of entrepreneurship that I think most people are exposed to. It took a while for me to kind of accept, and I think I'm still working on it, but accept the fact that that's not who I want to be.
Yeah.
And that's not what motivates me. That's not what actually would benefit me. It would do more harm. It has done more harm than good, ultimately.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. Again, it is just different capacities for risk. I was talking to a good friend of mine, is the founder and CEO of a startup that's valued at many millions of dollars. It was just kind of talking about his experience. And it's while he is undoubtedly successful and things are going well for him, it doesn't sound like that's not what I would want. And like just kind of hearing the describing of what it's like to get VC and the rounds of funding and how all of that is very much, you know, to me sounded, you know, kind of like a scripted, like, this is what we do now. And kind of that whole side of things isn't compelling to me. So if I had kind of started that business, I think I would be, even if successful, disappointed. So I think it's good to know, and potentially good for our listener to know, whoever that might be out there, that there are different ways of running businesses. And if that doesn't sound compelling to you either, that's okay. And that you can have a successful business that isn't run like a tech business. The way tech businesses are run is not necessarily how all businesses are or should be.
Yeah, and I think to bring this back to the idea of hiring, like the reason that I am so hesitant to make recommendations is because I think it's so highly personal to each founder. And I think this is something that really isn't being talked about to a degree. And I know this is something that you and I have talked about to an extent, but the founder or the person in charge, kind of what their risk profile is, what their mental health status is, all of that has such a huge impact on the way that you choose to run your business. And so what, like, advice that you might get that doesn't factor that in, that doesn't factor in your own kind of risk profile and your own kind of mental health and capabilities and whatnot, like, that is probably advice that you should take with a grain of salt. And so for me, like, for a decision that is as big and consequential as hiring, possibly, you know, for great good and for very low lows as well, you have to kind of factor all that stuff in. So there is no kind of metric or rule of thumb. And I'm increasingly suspicious of people who provide that metric or rule of thumb and don't kind of qualify it. And I think my hope is that, you know, as these issues become more, as it becomes more acceptable to talk about these things, I would like to see a movement around these other approaches to business and kind of coming to terms and coming to accept and appreciate and embrace the fact that maybe you don't hire, you know, necessarily, you know, as quickly as you might like, and not just putting that in opposition to kind of the, you know, not to call anyone out, but I'm going to, you know, the Basecamp folks, I think have been really good about talking about kind of these alternate paths to success, but they really do it in a way that puts it in kind of stark contrast to the tech business, right? Yeah. So for them, it's like, and I get it, because they fit the profile of business that could be a unicorn type, you know, and certainly they're very successful, but I think it's more important to talk about kind of these alternate modes of business for personal reasons. Business is highly personal. And I think people who talk about business as this kind of abstract game that we're all playing, like, that to me is just not appealing anymore. We start businesses to achieve personal ends. And so therefore, the person making the call, the business owner, the people that you hire, the team around you, you have to factor those personal factors in. And I think for a long time, it's been looked down on as, like, that's such a soft or, you know, emotions aren't part of business. And that's bullshit. You know, and so anyway, to kind of tie that back hiring, I think it has to be such it's a personal decision at the end of the day, right? Like, it should make sense for your business, but you also need to factor in, are you personally ready to hire? Are you ready to be a manager? Are you ready for all of the kind of stresses and all of the anxieties that come from that? And I think for everyone, there will be a time where the answer is yes. But I think for many people, the answer is going to be no, and that has to be okay. You have to accept that too.
Yeah. That's an excellent point. And just on the business being personal, yeah. So I have been an employee, I have been a manager and executive, and I have been a business owner, and all business is personal, and anyone who says it isn't is trying to fuck you. it is super, super personal, because it makes up a third of our a third of our lives, not just waking, and literally our only means of survival. So it's super, super personal.
Yeah. And being a part of, you know, several business communities and being having gone through, you know, coaching programs and all these different things, like I get so frustrated when you get these sort of prescriptive, this is how you should do it because this is the right way to do it. And it is this treating it almost like a business, like a mechanical sort of operation.
Yeah.
That you can kind of really tightly it's optimize if you follow the instructions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And certainly there is a component of that. But at the end of the day, you know, like we're saying, it's so personal that to treat it like a mechanism that you can tinker with and you know, if you put the gear in the right way, everything kind of works. Like that's nonsense.
Or if your business failed, it's because you didn't put the gears in the exact right place, and it was definitely your specific fault and not just a shitty coincidence.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. Well, speaking of the right way to do things, everyone should go to Amazon.com and buy things through our links, because this is the part of the show where we tell you to buy things and then you you go through the links in our show notes and then we get a fraction of a percent of that purchase. So what are you telling people to buy this week?
I'm going to buck the trend. I actually have nothing to recommend this week.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that was an option.
Well, you know, it's only an option because it's true.
Because you've done it.
Well, I haven't read any books in months. I haven't bought anything.
More of a magazine guy.
Even though, man, I'm so far behind. Work has been kind of overwhelming. And so I haven't really had the time or the energy, really. It's not even about the time. It's about the energy to really get into anything. I am... expecting to have some recommendations next time we record this as my schedule slows down and I can kind of get back to my life again. But yeah, as of today, I've got nothing.
Well, that's fine. I'll do one for both of us since you'd probably recommend it anyway. And we may have recommended it on the show before. Who knows? But it's A Win Without Pitching Manifesto by Blair Enns. I finally read this just like 2 weeks ago. And it's really good. I'm not going to say it's dated now, but it's from a few years ago. So a lot of it is beginning to become a little more common knowledge or kind of, accepted, practices within the agency world, but it's basically about how agencies can, increase profit and by increasing value, with their clients and not have to, do a bunch of pitching and responding to RFPs. It's good. We've kind of modeled a lot of our business based on this kind of now accepted and growing trend of getting out of pitching, getting out of RFPs, and pricing your services based on the value you create for your clients. So super recommended, especially if you're kind of trapped in that RFP cycle for your business. I think it could be very helpful. So that's my reco.
Awesome. Yeah, and this is one that has been on my list of things that I want to read for quite some time.
I got the Kindle version and read it waiting for the doctor.
So it's a quickie then.
It's a super quickie, but worth it.
Cool. Yeah. And I guess I don't have an Amazon recommendation, but I know we've talked about it on the show before, but the Two Bobs podcast, from David C. Baker and Blair Enns is absolutely heads and tails. You know, it's by far my favorite podcast right now, and that includes like the non-business podcasts. Like I genuinely just enjoy listening to it so much, and highly recommend that you do it as well. I think they talk about business and they talk specifically talking to consultants and agencies in a way that I don't think any other podcast is, and if there are other podcasts out there that you think are comparable, like I definitely want to know about them, because I savor these episodes. I star them. I re-listen. There's just a ton of great stuff in there. And yeah, if David and Blair, if you ever hear this, we would love to have you on the show. I don't know. I think that's maybe slightly out of our reach and slightly out of your pay grade, but boy, oh boy.
Thanks.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, that's never going to happen. Certainly not on this show, but But maybe when I start a new solo project, I think I'll be able to get them.
That's completely fair. I'm definitely dragging it down.
Yeah, that's how I felt recently. Cool.
Awesome.
What else do we have to tell the people? Just go to our website, notarealjob.com. Find all the links there.
That's it. Notarealjob.com. And honestly, the only content really that I'm creating these days is over on Twitter, at Chris Van Patten. Joel, I'm not seeing you very active there lately. I'm a little jealous of that, but I know you're still there.
I deleted the Twitter app off my phone. I pop in, I'm going to say once or twice a week.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm trying to get Twitter out of my life. It was hurting my mental health. I think I feel better as a result. But I'm on Mastodon now.
Oh boy. Guess I ought to get over there.
No, I grabbed my username, but I don't imagine I'll ever do anything. Fair. I've been, as I said earlier on the show, I've been blogging for my business, recently. So if you're interested in doing more effective in-house marketing for your business, you can go to familyknife.com and read those articles.
Great. There you go. And cool. Do read them. They're very good.
Thanks, bud.
I enjoy reading them. And so, yeah, that's going to do it for us. We will be back, maybe next week, maybe 2 weeks. Yeah. We'll see. But yeah, we appreciate you all.
Bye. Not a Real Job is sponsored by Van Patten Media.
And The Family Knife.
Van Patten Media builds websites and web applications for businesses who care about intuitive and effective user experiences. Its sister agency, Tomodomo, does the same, with a focus on online communities and social applications.
And if you want to do more marketing in-house but need the tools, strategies, or support to do it, The Family Knife is the partner you need to build your marketing capabilities and grow your business.
You can find Van Patten Media at vanpattenmedia.com.
And you can find The Family Knife at familyknife.com.
For more information on being a sponsor of Not a Real Job, visit notarealjob.com/sponsorships.